Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey! What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy, Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
You touched my heart, you touched my soul. Changed my life and all my goals. And love is blind and that I knew it. My heart was blinded by you. I've kissed your lips and held your head. Shared your dreams and shared your bed. I know you well, I know your smell. I've been addicted to you. Goodbye, my lover. Goodbye, my friend. You have been the one. You have been the one for me. Goodbye, my lover. Goodbye, my friend. You have been the one. You have been the one for me.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude, brought to you by Boston College 24/7 and Armchair All-Americans, Season 3, Week 15, Special Edition, Steve Addazio is Fired episode. As Harvey Dent once said, you either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Despite a huge road victory at Pitt to become bowl eligible for the sixth time in 7 years, Daz had officially become that villain for far too many fans in Chestnut Hill, and Martin Jarman announced on Sunday that the head dude's day on the Heights were officially over. On today's episode, we'll discuss Addazio's legacy, explore the likely replacements based on our insider sources, and figure out whether this podcast officially has an identity crisis.
Matt, I'm so very sorry for your loss. There's a real sadness in your voice that I think everyone can hear. I think we all should agree that despite some good times over the past 7 years, this was the right time to make a change and the future is brighter than ever. But before we get to everything, jam-packed episode, emergency episode is brought to you by our friends at MyBookie. The football season is just about over, but there are still a few weeks to get off the sidelines and get into the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all the football action every weekend, always with the most up-to-date lines and most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. If you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie, whether it's parlays, teasers, props, futures, live bets. They have everything you need to make money on the weekends. Best part is if you join right now with MyBookie, they will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000 to use on all of your best picks. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Matt, I'll just start with the obvious question on everyone's mind. Are you no longer a BC football fan?
Matt, there's a lot of rumors circulating about that. I will say, obviously, Sunday was a day I've been dreading really for the last 3 years. It seems like at least once a year, the fire Addazio rumors came rolling around, and I was on my island trying to defend them, and it worked for the first 2 years, but I guess this year enough was enough for everyone. I will say I've been an absolute wreck ever since the news broke on Sunday. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I have been doing 2 days at the gym just because I have so much anger sadness to work out. So yeah, so that's a plus. But, my feelings on Daz have been well documented. I thought he was the perfect guy to lead this program. I thought he was building something and was on the cusp of, potentially sustaining 9+ wins. But obviously 99% of the fans and, MJ and the athletic department didn't see it that way. And that's all that matters. So now we got to find the next guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely out of your mind, as we've discussed in great detail, but we don't need to go back down that road. The bottom line is that he should be commended for, taking us out of the spaz basement. If you look at the types of recruits that we're getting now, their comparative offers, we're getting guys over you know, a couple Big Ten schools here and there versus the final Spaziani years. We were getting guys over like Central Connecticut State and maybe Harvard. But the bottom line is that, again, to your point, he plateaued very quickly. And at no point was there any indication to anyone, except really, I'll say for you, that, you know, something was going to have a breakthrough. He had all of the, you know, dominoes lined up over the last couple of years and couldn't make it happen. So I think that this was definitely the right time to make a change. I'm feeling excellent. I think that there is, I'll say there's just about no one I'll trust, you know, as much as I trust Martin Jarmon to make the right hire. I think he's going to really take this program in the right direction. Like he mentioned in his press conference today, that's kind of the goal. So I'm feeling excellent right now. I think the fan base is feeling excellent. And look, the bottom line is that coaching searches are just fun. This is a fun time to be a fan.
This is zero fun.
I'm having a blast. We got rumors. We got insider information. We got, you know, inside, you know, the guys popping up on Twitter with 100 followers, but they seem to, you know, claim to have a hot tip. I love it. I can't get enough of it. So I'm excited for the next 7 to 10 days.
And you are the captain of the grass is always greener crowd that thinks that everything's going to be great and we're going to hire someone. We're going to go undefeated tomorrow.
No.
And that's what's going to happen. So
I think there's absolutely, look, there's absolutely a risk. But again, Matt, having a risk is no reason to sit and just be happy with 6 wins in the regular season every year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But what I would say is, obviously, we had a baseline of 7 wins. And, you know, I think that you and I would both agree that with a healthy roster and, you know, a couple breaks here or there, this team, you know, could have achieved a lot more than that, both last year and then maybe not as much this year with that defense. But, you know, I think a lot of things were going our way and things were set up. You know, the future was looking bright under Addazio, in my opinion, and we're blowing it all up. And,
well, first of all, we're not blowing up. Second of all, we've been in the future for all right, let's not go back down this road. I'm not here to gloat or stomp on your grave. I think that clearly the jury is out. But yeah, I mean, at some point, it is a serious question. Like, I think that there is a non-zero chance. And in fact, I would say it's a somewhat significant chance that you, whether outwardly or secretly, root against this team next year, because I can't even imagine how elated you would be to see a new coach come in and go 1-10 or 1-11 next year.
No, I don't. I think that's ridiculous. But what I'm saying is, and it's, by the way, what everyone on the national scale is saying is,
oh,
tell you
don't,
what,
don't give me that.
Well, hold on. I mean, that's what everyone's saying is, you know, BC had it pretty good, right? He never got above the 7-win mark. He probably would have got 8 last year. Probably would have gotten 10 if Dylan stayed healthy. Whatever. Not the point, but it's a lot easier to get to 10 wins when you've built a minimum of 7 wins. And, you know, this program is looking at, you know, probably three wins for the next couple of years here. So
but really,
as long as everyone's good with that, and okay, you know, maybe it's a fact. I think we're
it's
getting
a fact
ahead of
that
ourselves.
We're going to win only 3 games over the next couple of years.
I think that's how most rebuilds work. And by the way, most
it's not
rebuilds,
a rebuild, Matt. It's not a rebuild.
I think by the time the dust settles, it might be.
He left us with a good cupboard. I'll say that much. But it's not a rebuild whatsoever. We need someone, you know, again, to change a couple things around and actually, you know, have good game day management and take it to the next level. But you can't call this a rebuild. It's a retool, and it's you know, kind of you're continuing momentum and actually going to take someone to achieve that potential that, you know, you've felt was there for the last 7 years.
It will be a rebuild by the time all the dust settles. We're already seeing people, you know, enter
the
transfer portal.
We lost Aaron Gethers. Aaron Gethers, and I don't even remember the other guy's name.
Evan Stewart, a 3-star recruit, was a top 20 player in the state of New Jersey. He was going to be a star linebacker, but now he's going to Rutgers. So everyone in New Jersey is, you know, potentially going to flip. We're going to lose a ton of people. People come for the Addazio brand. If you're an offensive lineman, you come to play for Daz, and that's a fact. We're going to see a ton of people. We're going to lose a ton of people. And, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves. How about we pump the brakes here? Let's start over. I don't know. Where do you want to start with this thing? I know we don't really have an agenda. This is an agenda-free episode, emergency
episode.
Yeah,
it's an emergency episode, so we don't have any agenda. I don't really care. I mean, again, I think that, you know, we can dive. Well, you know what? Actually, no, I do want to hit on your mention of the national perspective of you know, you're basically playing into that of everyone who, you know, only has a recent memory of BC, and really their memory starts in the Spaz days, and they say, wow, you know, BC was a team that under Spaziani was only winning, you know, they won 2 games in a year. They should be thrilled that they can win 6, maybe 7 games in a good year. That's the national perspective, but that's not true. You know better than anybody if you go back to basically the 2000s and before that, you know, consistently having the ability to win, you know, 8 games, 9 games, 10 games, whether it's only, you know, once or twice in a decade, that's fine. But at least there's the option there. This has just been stale. And you know that. And you know that that's a terrible national perspective and that's not a fair representation. But if you feel that way, then I feel bad for you as a BC fan. And I think that you are, severely off base. I'll just say that.
All right. And I think you know, based on the past few weeks of conversations we've had, both on air and off, that's not remotely what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we had a baseline of 7 wins, and we had to fix a couple of problems, you know, really fully on the defensive side. And if we had done that, then I would have liked our chances next year.
Well, anyway, the bottom line is that it would be, and I know we're not doing any formalized dude or pood this week, but my pood would absolutely be the just that, the national perspective. It's really bothered me. It's been on Reddit CFB. It's been on all of Daz's, you know, ESPN buddies that are saying this is such a mistake, whatever. You're BC, be happy with 7 wins. I'm not necessarily saying that's your point, but that is something that has bothered me significantly over the last 24 hours and really, I guess, for the couple weeks leading up to this.
All right, let's take a step back here. I want to just go over kind of how the weekend ended up shaping up, but we should really start with the Pitt game. Hell of a game on Saturday. You know, obviously, you know, wasn't enough, and Jarman apparently didn't really care about it. He'd already made up his mind, rightfully so, right? But I thought it was a cool win, a great win for the program. It's cool they're bowl eligible. It's obviously not the ultimate goal. But, you know, what the offense did on Saturday against Pitt, at Pitt, we were, 9.5-point dogs against the 6th best rushing defense in the country. BC racks up 264 yards. Dillon on the offensive line had a huge game. Grissel came through and it mattered. He kept the sticks moving, had a great touchdown throw to Hunter Long for the first touchdown there. The defense played great. They, you know, really played the game of their life, holding Pitt to just 19 points.
McDuffie, which is sad, which is such a sad statement. I mean, I agree with you, but that's such a sad statement that the best game that this defense could possibly play is holding the University of Pittsburgh to around 20 points.
Did you know, I mean, I looked this up. It's the first time since September that we've held the team under 38 points.
Yeah, I can buy that. That's just not surprising.
But anyway, you saw what happened when you know, your best player, McStuffie comes back, you know, and I tweeted this out, but I think it's fair to say that this defense, you know, with him holding it down in the middle with Richardson, would have looked a lot different if he was healthy this year, and it could have turned a couple of those, you know, five or less point losses that we had to Wake and Louisville, you know, maybe Florida State. We could have turned those from losses to wins very easily. So, you know, you like to see that. McDuffie had 13 tackles, 2 sacks. They did give up a ton of passing yards, 323.
Doesn't sound like them at all. It must be a different defense.
But it was similar to the Virginia Tech game where, you know, we dominated the turnover battle. I think we, what was it, 4-0 on the turnover battle. So we were able to keep Pitt out of the red zone and, you know, gave the offense a short field. So, you know, really offensively and defensively, I thought it was a really complete performance. I was glad to send Daz out with a W. I thought it would be enough to keep him around. It really was a roller coaster of a day on Saturday, really all weekend, really all week. When you talk about the rumors with, you know, Daz going to Rutgers and then, you know, then Chiano takes the job and then, you know, Daz and MJ hug at the 50-yard line. And, you know, it was just,
my take on that interaction is that they basically had an agreement beforehand that, look, this is it. You know, there was a bar to hit this year and, you know, getting 6 regular season wins is not reaching that bar. But look, we appreciate what you did and we obviously want to send you out on a high note. So I took that to be, and I saw some people saying it on Twitter, like, you know, MJ is just a stone cold killer, basically giving him the handshake and then shooting him when he looks away. But I took that to be a much more, you know, positive. And again, you know, as much as, you know, we do trash him sometimes, I think that there's a lot that he can be commended for. And, you know, I do think getting out on a high note, the players seemed excited in the locker room after, and obviously they're excited to go bowling. So overall, I'm, you know, certainly very pleased with how Saturday went. That was the AJ Dillon game that we were waiting for all year. Guy was just an absolute monster, especially on that last drive. So, and realistically too, that will be his last game in maroon and gold. I think he'd be an idiot to play in the Quick Lane Bowl personally, but, yeah, that's just my 2 cents. I'm very happy overall with the performance and also glad that, you know, I was a little worried that BC would be that short-sighted, that they would have one game dictate a 90-game sample size, but glad to see that there was a little bit more foresight and that decision was not made on the, you know, drop of a hat.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And my thought was if they won, it would give them something to think about. Obviously, if they lost, and that's right. Not to say that it's one game basing everything, but you can't bring back a coach that would have been, losing 6 of 8 after he last year also imploded down the stretch. So I was pretty sure he was gone with a loss, especially, I mean, you sort of knew that there were signs, right? Like on his Monday press or whatever it was, he just seemed sort of dejected.
Yeah, the body language, and I do think, you know, getting blown out to Notre Dame is like a, you know, that's a loss you can't afford, right? Like that's, especially for BC, which is a fan base that is, at least with the money, you know, the big donors, they're not probably tuned in, week out like we are, but they see when we lose by 50 to Notre Dame, and that does, you know, get some heads rolling. I would assume that these conversations were happening earlier in the year. Some folks have said that, you know, the behind the scenes turmoil started after Kansas, which would make a lot of sense too. But yeah, it seemed to me like he knew there was nothing he possibly could have done. So go out on a high note, and that's kind of all you can ask.
Yeah, it was that press conference combined with the Rutgers rumors, because you figure if he knew he was safe,
yeah, then he's not even entertaining that.
Yeah, and if it was a fake report, which, you know, maybe it was, he would have shut it down immediately, right, type of thing, right? So the fact that that was hanging out there on Wednesday, and I think ultimately probably scared Schiano into coming back to the table. But I had sort of convinced myself, especially the way Saturday went, and then you talked about the celebration in the locker room afterwards. I was feeling good Saturday. I was thinking, all right, you know, obviously it wasn't a great year, but, you know, the administration will understand that we lost AB midway through the year. We sent a ton of guys to the NFL on defense last year. We only returned three starters. And, you know, not to make excuses, because I know there have been a lot of excuses being tossed around in this tenure. But those are things you have to take into consideration. And if this team was fully loaded, would the results have been different? I think they would have been. But in year seven, I don't necessarily blame people for taking action, especially, you know, MJ had to make a move last year, either in football or basketball. And I do think that if he had acted on Jim Christian last year, then we wouldn't be in this situation. But it's getting to the point where that was becoming his legacy. It's just not making a move. So for personal reasons, and I'm not saying it's not the right reason, but I had the feeling in the back of my mind that MJ said, all right, I got to do something.
Right. Yeah, it is a really interesting dynamic, too, with the basketball side of it. Like, it's legitimately the basketball. I mean, and I don't really want to get into it because it's depressing, but what we've seen at the start of this year. I'm sure you would. No, I mean, this is, again, you're psyched about this, and I'm worried that you're going to do the same with football if they go down.
No, I'm not. Well, maybe I will. I don't know, but
I think you will.
I won't do that. But the reason I dump on the basketball team is A, because it's an embarrassment. B, I used to love them, and now it's just nothing to me. It's nothingness. What's the point of watching? And three, I felt that if basketball was egregiously bad, which they are, then that would take the heat off football being average, and we'd be able to sort of stay the course, because I think that's the path forward. And now we're looking at, you know, the next few years to be lost years in both programs. And, you know, me being a super fan is, I don't know, it sort of takes all the fun out of it for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think that's a very pessimistic output that I will not agree with you on. I think that there is, again, a ton to be excited about here, but neither here nor there.
I know, but like that's... Like, you understand that, like, 70% of Power 5 coaches fail. And the ones that do succeed, it usually doesn't happen until year four.
Fine, but this isn't like a success that we should be striving for. If you told me right now, man, and if, you know, you said, hey, this next coach is going to come in and get you, you know, 6 or 7 wins every year, I'm not happy with that either, and you shouldn't, and neither should anybody. So it's the same when we hired Daz. Like, that's not the measure of success that we need to be looking for, is the bottom line.
Okay, but...
I'm saying by that metric, you would put him in the 70% of failures.
I didn't fully follow that, but I'm sure whatever it is makes sense.
Thank you.
But my point in the 70% is the massive failures, right? It's more like what you see at Florida State, what you saw at Mississippi State. I mean, freaking Scott Frost at Nebraska, they're paying him $5 million a year. He was the perfect hire. And you see what he's on the hot seat in year two, despite him being a legend for that program, and he went undefeated with UCF. I mean, even if you hire the perfect guy, there's still a pretty good chance of failure. And that's not taking into consideration all the challenges that are well documented at BC when you talk about the budget constraints, you know, the inability to hold on to star coordinators, right? The you know, lack of recruiting footholds unless you go to other states. I mean, the list goes on.
Well, so again, shout out to our insiders at Eagle Insiders, BC247, but the reports are at least that the assistant budgets have been drastically increased, as well as the overall head coaching budget here. I think the Board of Trustees has finally realized that money is needed to win here. I mean, you look at what Schiano was asking, which I do think 8 years, $32 million and 25 guaranteed is a crazy price tag. But I think he had another line in there for $7 million a year for his basically staff. So that's like 10 to 15 guys. So you could get coordinators at, you know, 500,000, 600,000, 700,000. And that's when you start to keep these guys. So I think that if we do make that investment, then you're not going to run into these challenges anymore. We kind of need to decide, are we going to go in or are we not? Are we just going to be okay with mediocrity? I think this firing and what sounds like at least the back channel conversations going on are that we actually are investing and actually going to attempt to have a top 25 program like the, you know, Capital campaign lays out all the time, which it also says for basketball, which clearly we're not even making an effort in. But again, neither here nor there.
That Richmond game on Saturday.
Well, it's amazing.
One of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah. And I tweeted it out, but it's the easiest bet in the history of sports is whatever the line is for the opposition, the second half line, take it with all of your money. I don't know what happens if it's like we are just that maybe poor schematically, and it's something that any coach with brains can, you know, take a second half and say, oh yeah, this is like super easy to dissect and tear these guys apart and we'll beat them by 50. Because that's how it seems. If you look through like the last three or four games, that's basically been exactly how it's broken out. We've hung very tough in the first half to, you know, not bad opponents. Like Richmond's a good team. You know, Richmond's a fine team. DePaul's a tournament team. You know, these are fine teams.
That's really ever to excel there, Matt.
No, I agree with you. It's pathetic. But I'm saying if you won these games, even if it was by 2 points, you'd be feeling good. But it's, yeah, you hang tough and then you lose by 100 in the second half. So
yeah,
very frustrated
just,
there.
This year,
I think Northwestern will kill him tomorrow in the AJ Turner revenge game. Is he still even there, by the way? Do we know?
I can't. That was like 2014.
Yeah, it seems like he shouldn't be, but with transfers, you never know.
I think this year it's more of a talent thing than anything. We don't have any good players, and the good players that we do have don't get touches because Eli Carter Thornton is just, all he does is, you know, ill-advised shots and turn the ball over. So I just can't stand that Jim Christian still has a job and Steve Adazio doesn't. And if I know Father Leahy, Adazio going down might mean that Christian's here even longer, which is just unfathomable to me at this point.
I could see, and again, I don't want to get off topic here because obviously football is the, you know, main article here, but I could see a midseason firing for basketball, which I know is just impossibly un-BC, but the way these last few games have gone, Martin obviously is a basketball guy first and foremost, so he's more plugged in than any athletic director we've ever had before. I absolutely could see just being completely embarrassed and you know, I'm sure he already is, but being completely embarrassed and saying, look, enough's enough. We've given you same thing, 7 years. Let Spinelli, you know, be the interim coach for the year. He's really the best recruiter that we have. So it's not even like we'd lose the Christian recruiting bump, which while the guys haven't necessarily panned out, I think the freshmen have looked, you know, good so far, but they're still at least very high recruits. So maybe give them a little bit to develop. But yeah, I'm with you. It's absolutely atrocious and it does add insult to injury, but you know, it's an interesting dynamic here at Boston College, and here we are. Hockey, though, has won like five straight, so that's good, I guess. I don't really care.
Congrats to the hockey team.
Yep.
Okay. I don't really have much else on my list here, Matt, regarding the Pitt game. I actually want one other note here. How ironic is it that in Coach Adazio's last game, we go 4-for-4 on field goals?
Yeah, that's a very fitting tribute, I will say that. And for good measure, another kick out of bounds. Just phenomenal.
Oh,
I can't
get forgot about
it.
That.
I can't get enough of it.
It was multiple, I think.
Were there two?
Yeah.
I mean, I believe it. It's that's my favorite subplot in the history of BC athletics, and I hope it never ends.
But I mean, it's a big time win. I mean, at Pitt, I mean, we were not 9.5 point dogs, right?
Which was crazy, by the way.
I agree.
Mine made no sense to me, but yeah.
I agree. But they're, the second best team in the Coastal? So when you look at our schedule, we beat
third.
Obviously,
but
they're all tied for second.
Yeah,
right?
fair. That's fair.
So if you look at it, right? So we beat the second and third best team in the Coastal.
Yep.
And then we also, obviously, who else did we beat? Oh, we beat
NC State, Syracuse.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
It's Monday, Matt. My brain's not working properly. Yep. But we beat Syracuse at NC State by 52 points, again, with a backup quarterback and, you know, a rebuilding defense. So there were some positives this year, obviously. You know, obviously, if you turn around the games against Florida State, against Louisville, and, you know, Wake, then, you know, that's 10 wins right there. And I know it's easy to say that, but
yeah, I mean, you could do that. You could do that every year, and there's a reason why it's never come to fruition.
No, I know, but it's just crazy to me that, you know, you think about those games and how it's really one key play that could have made the difference in all three of those games. And, you know, if we get a couple of those, then we're having a very different conversation. Obviously, you know, it goes back to last year, too, with Florida State, you know, obviously giving up that last-minute touchdown. I mean, And you know, I get everyone saying at some point it is what it is and Daz is what he is, but it's just so frustrating that, you know, instead of just fixing those small things that prevents those plays from happening, we're starting from square one. And that's my concern in all this is that, you know, we're not going to see a winning BC program for the next few years. And that makes me
that's an absurd fear.
It makes me sad.
It makes me sad,
Matt.
Yeah, if that's the case, Matt, that will suck. for everyone except for you. You'll be psyched, but it will like that's. I think that you're just super pessimistic right now is the bottom line.
I think realistic is a better term.
You think realistic? You think it's so? If you're a gambling man right now, you would go and if you got even money odds on the over under say 3.5 for the next 4 years, you're going to take the under on that.
I wouldn't bet against BC. No, but if you think it's above 6.5, then you're probably out of your mind.
Okay. I mean, look, there's no point in arguing with you. I think we've gone down that road many times.
I'm laying it's out just what realistically will happen when you.
It's
hire not
you
your
can't
coach.
Say it's realistic. It's pessimistic. If you like, first of all, the turnover is not going to be what you expect. Again, shout out to Eagle Insiders. They've been reaching out to the commits. So far, there's been no real sign of wavering. Yeah, at least for any of the big names.
I've read that too, Matt. There's a few that are taken off.
Do you know this? That there's a few that's taken off.
Yeah, read the article.
Okay. I can't
say their names because it's a VIP post.
It's a premium perk, so go sign up.
Yeah, so we can't say it. You guys have to pay the subscription, which, by the way, we recommend doing. It's absolutely a no-brainer. But we will lose people. We will continue to lose people, especially, by the way, if we don't either bring in, number one, a big name, or two, someone that has a similar philosophy to what Daz had. Because, again, people come
here sure,
to
but
play,
at that point, you can't get upset about that football. If you're doing it. Right, but that's like you get your guys, you get the right style of guys in there. You know, that's not a bad thing inherently.
Okay, but it takes 2 to 3 years then to implement, to recruit the guys that fit your system. And, hopefully you cross your fingers that it all works out. But more often than not, it doesn't. That's all I'm saying. It's not that absurd to say that.
Okay, but let me, a simple yes or no question here, because we do need to move on. There's a lot to cover in this emergency podcast episode. That is, I think we've gone off the rails a little bit here. Bottom line, if you could guarantee, let's say Spaz stay or Daz stays, you could guarantee the next 4 years we win 6 or 7 games exclusively, or you take the unknown. Like, yes, there's a risk, but are you just going to be happy with for the next decade of never going above 7 wins?
No, but I think you and I would both agree that Daz is bringing back probably one of his better teams next year, and if everyone stayed healthy.
Well, I mean, you're losing Dylan, who you counted Dylan injury last year for like 5 wins. So
okay,
you're losing
have,
him. That's
and we have Bailey, who is what could be a junior. You have Garwo. You have the best line getting 1 year better. You have Bajakian with another year in the offseason to mentor Grossel, who I think has a ton of potential.
Well, I mean, it would be AB, but yeah.
Either AB or Grossel or Sam Johnson, whoever it is, we have options. The offense would, again, be one of the top in the country. The defense would only get better. So, yeah.
By the way, I know we didn't do an episode after Notre Dame. I have a little bone to pick with you on this best offense in the country that can only score 7 points against Notre Dame and 3 points against Clemson or whatever it was. Let's be clear that it's a good offense because it's more than what BC's been able to do, over the past couple of years. But by no means is this some electric elite offense that can't put up anything against top 25 opponents.
Reporting the news, it's the best statistical offense since 1984, I think.
Well, that's sad in and of itself.
Well, we had it was better. We're getting more yards per game than during the Matt Ryan years.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Is this a better offense than the Matt Ryan years?
It's comparable. Yeah. It's a little different, obviously.
It's comparable.
That's what I said.
I'm saying that I'm trying to make sure I heard that correctly.
Yeah. We gained 40 more yards per game than we did in the Matt Ryan days. It's just on the ground. So people have a big issue with it. The issue is clearly on the defensive side of the football. If we have an average defense, we win 10 games this year.
But it's a final. Again, the fact that we can't score more than 10 points against Notre Dame or Clemson is, and I know those are good teams, but like that should be a red flag.
I mean, Clemson is the best team in college football history. Yeah, it was tough to go on the road at Notre Dame with a backup quarterback. But yeah, I mean, against everyone else,
well,
we put up huge numbers.
Oh my God. All right, let's move on. I want to just touch quickly here. I don't want to go too into it because I think it's already been laid out there. I do want to talk about the player reactions. I don't want to bash on, again, Daz too much here because I do think that there are multiple perspectives to every story. The reality is that some coaches are going to rub, some guys the right way and some guys the wrong way, as we've seen here. The big four names, I'd say, really, in the player reaction side of things would be Josh Kyes and Andre Williams came out pretty vocally against Daz with some, I'd say, some damning stories. And then on the other side, he was defended pretty strongly by Matt Patchen, the grad transfer, who, again, and I don't say this in any bad way whatsoever because he has all the right to be loyal to Daz. This guy recruited him to Florida. He helped him get another shot at BC. He's an offensive line guy. He absolutely should be in his corner. And then Miles Willis as well, who I think is, one of the highest character guys to ever put on the BC uniform. So that is a good one to have in the Daz corner for sure. But it's ugly. It's ugly to see the stories come out overall. You hope that they're not 100% true or there's more to the story or whatever it is. But, it's... it's interesting to see where the bodies are buried. There were a couple other, you know, Chris Cameron, the former, I don't know what his role was, the SID or something, but there's some stuff out there. And I think we did see some of Daz's thin skin sometimes during the press conference and things like that. But it's interesting to see. I'll leave it at that.
I'd say it's probably 95-5 pro Daz and anti Daz when I look at, and you mentioned Patchen, Miles Willis, John Fadul, and all the players that played over the last 3 years, you know, liking those comments. I think it's pretty clear that these guys love Daz, and you don't have to look any further than the post-game celebration on Saturday. Also say, the Andre Williams thing's just weird. Like, sorry, he wouldn't shake your hand when he's trying to prepare for a game when he probably didn't even see you. Like, that's such a weird thing to have a big issue with. I think
some of these people, you never know.
Kais is probably the same way. He got cut from the Falcons. He's looking for an axe to grind.
So you're going to tell me you don't buy that story?
No, I don't. It's a weird story. Maybe it's born out of truth, but I think it's more likely that there's a personal issue there. And it's football. I mean, that's what ex-players have, you know, talk shit about their former. You Google, Nick Saban, and there's all sorts of former players that ripped
right,
him.
But is Nick Saban going to lock you out of the facility and then call your current boss and try to get you cut? I mean, if that's even remotely true, that's like pathetic.
Does that sound like a real story?
Honestly, yes, it does.
Okay.
It honestly does.
On the Andre Williams side, I'd say not shaking your hand is a decent trade-off for getting, not I don't want to say single-handedly, but increasing your yards per rushing yards per season from about 400 to 2,200 in the 1 year that Daz was there. So it's weird that Andre is anti-Daz. I would have thought that he'd be appreciative of the opportunities that came about as a result of, Daz's style of play and the offensive line and all that. But who knows? But I think that it's more so people, being opportunistic and hating Daz. I don't read a lot into it. I read into everything that everyone else is saying how great of a guy he is.
Okay. That's not even remotely a surprising take, so we'll move on. The other reactions, again, the locker room side of it, by all accounts, again, on the insider accounts, no one was super. I mean, no, I think everyone just kind of saw it coming.
Marcus Outlow also had an anti-Daz statement. Okay. That's because he got buried on the depth chart and didn't get any touches and ended up playing at Stony Brook.
Okay. Again, the locker room, it seemed like no one was, obviously no one was going to be jumping for joy, but also no one was, throwing chairs or anything. It just seems like everyone kind of expected it to happen. I think they all seem to appreciate, him for what he did, but appreciate that it's time to move on. Martin had like a 90-minute discussion with them last night to walk through it all. So I think that, I would imagine that those guys are pretty comfortable, with Martin's decision-making and the ability for him to come up with the right guy. So there will be, of course, some wait and see, I'm sure, with some of the guys. But, for the most part, I think that you saw what happened at Ole Miss where they fired, what's the guy's name, Luke or Lake or whatever, and now half the team is threatened to transfer. So could be something like that. It's not the case here, which is, obviously
that,
relieved.
That story was debunked.
The Ole Miss one?
Yeah, someone said that, and then all the other players were like, it didn't actually happen.
Okay, interesting.
So I have a quick on that subject, and this is a combination of some insider stuff, but really just educated guesses. Here's a list of names that I have that have some type of connection to either New Jersey, the O-line pipeline, the Daz pipeline. Basically names that I could see entering the transfer portal. Everyone knows how easy it is to transfer these days. It's essentially free agency in college football. So when a big, event like this occurs and the coach gets fired, you see a ton of attrition. So here's the list of names. I'm not saying they're all leaving, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a portion of these go. Petrula, Vrabel, AB, Garwo, Kobe, Flowers, McDuffie, Richardson, Sheeta, Marcus Valdez, Muse, DePalma, and basically every good offensive lineman, okay, running back and tight end we have, Matt.
Okay. So everyone is just your answer there.
I think we could see a ton of attrition.
Did you mention your name as well? Are you also going to transfer?
Wherever Daz ends up,
you'll
I will
be
following
fan
that
by
program.
Tuesday, yeah.
And that's not even mentioning the top commits, like you mentioned earlier. Kevin Pine, Corey Smith, Gordner, Trapillo, Joyner.
Okay. Look, there's no sense in even arguing with this. You're absolutely out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
A lot of those guys will go to other programs. That is a fact.
Some of those guys will go to other programs. But for you to literally list every single person on the two deep and say, these are all people who I expect to go to the transfer portal is absolutely insane. That just doesn't happen when there's going to be attrition, but that does not happen in the magnitude that you're talking about right now. So again, no point in arguing at this point. We're just laying out opinions here. The other two, and I do want to spend some time talking about the possible replacements. So for the last, back half of the episode and all that, the only other one I want to talk about just quickly is we talked about how fun this is from the fan perspective or from all other fans, but like the rumors and all that. This has to be so much fun and, yeah, stressful as hell. But to be Martin Jarman for the next week just has to be awesome. Like, we all know the names. He's going to interview these coaches, trying to, you know, come up with offers to be the guy. Like, this has got to be the highest stakes, but also the most fun that he'll have, you know, as an athletic director. So jealous for him. And I do want to set up a conclave type setup. We got the whole Catholics football thing. Lock everyone in Conte for however long it takes until the maroon smoke comes out, and then we can let him out and announce we have a new head coach. So I'm all in on that, but overall very jealous of Martin's next week.
Yeah, I mean, fun is one way to describe it. I think
maybe not the right one, but
in a lot of ways, this is the biggest hire he'll ever make.
Right. This is. I mean, it's a career maker.
His legacy, and we all know that he doesn't really have a connection to Boston College. I think he ultimately would likely want to get back to the Big Ten, probably at Ohio State. Gene Smith's getting up there in age. It would make sense that Jarman is the successor, but I think that in order for the Board of Trustees to hire the next AD at a school like Ohio State, he's got to have some serious things to point to that go beyond, you know, sort of the day to day, like the even the facility and the game day tailgate enhancement, stuff like that. That doesn't really cut it. They're going to ask him, what big hires have you made? What has succeeded? And so in a lot of ways, you know, this is absolutely ginormous. Again, this is sort of why I thought that he wouldn't leave. He'd kind of leave the football program as is, especially from, you know, a national standpoint. It seemed like it was at least 50-50 on whether Dash should stay or go. But basketball, by all accounts, it's a pretty clear cut answer here. So I thought from that standpoint, him being a basketball guy, that's how we'd make his mark. But instead, he's making his first big hire. It's football. He obviously has a ton of connections to Ohio State, et cetera. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Well, with that, we'll segue into some of the names that are being floated around. I'm sure you're unhappy with every single one of these.
Matt, can we just like pump the brakes here? All I'm trying to do here is present the other side. And I know 99% of fans on Twitter or whatever are thrilled and assume that whoever comes in is going to do a great job. And I certainly hope that that's the case. But part of my goal here is to also, you know, try to alert the masses to some of the downsides here. And what history has shown is that, you know, this may not go as well as what everyone thinks.
Okay. Well, I don't know. The you'll root for whoever does feel a little hollow right now. I think we'll have to touch base in next August, next September. But we'll start with the big three names, all of which have Ohio State connections in some capacity. So Martin's, you know, certainly, I think, going to be hitting that pipeline where possible. The biggest name, I think, by far would be the, I don't want to say the home run, but by far the highest profile name, Luke Fickell, current coach at Cincinnati, has them back in the top 25, I think, as he's had for the last couple of years, was the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, the interim head coach for a little bit, I think, during some of the trestle drama, et cetera. So, you know, clearly has a working relationship with Martin and is, you know, a elite recruiter, especially in the Midwest for, you know, some of those Ohio State teams. And is probably the hottest name in the college football coaching scene right now as an up-and-comer, I would say. So the only downside I have for him is that, you know, A, he's probably interested in a higher profile job, we'll say, or something more in the Midwest. Again, Michigan State was rumored to be open this year. Sounds like that won't be, but that will be coming up soon. Or it's, you know, trying to wait out some other, you know, massive job, Michigan, when they come on the market, presumably, you know, within the next couple of years at this point. So my only downside with him is that he would, you know, A, maybe not be interested right away because of that, but also, you know, want to take off in a year or two, which I don't think should be a disqualifier either. Like, I think we talked about it with the JAG stuff, but you can't get mad at a coach if you hire someone and he does well and then wants to move on. You don't just want someone, you know, a Spaziani who would stay here forever. But at the same time, you don't want to have someone who, you know, his goal is to get to the Big Ten within, you know, probably a year or two.
Yeah, I personally, and by the way, Matt, I would shut up about everything I've ever said if we were able to land Luke Fickell. I think the fact of the matter is it's just there's zero chance of this happening. He's an Ohio State guy. He played at Ohio State. He was a coach there for a number of years. He's now, what, an hour away in Cincinnati, and he's the hottest name on the coaching block. He's making, I think, $2.4 million, and we paid Daz, what, $2.6 million? So yeah. If you put yourself in his shoes, right, he would leave a place where he wants to be long-term. He has six kids. He's going to uproot all six of his kids, move to a place he's never been before in Boston, a place that, you know, we disagree on the level of, and I don't want to say the word rebuild, but a place with significant challenges. And for him to be considered a success, he would have to come in right away and get to the 9-plus win territory that all the BC fans are clamoring for. It's a tall task, and if I was him, I would just ride it out what I'm doing in Cincinnati, keep winning in a much easier conference. And again, he's an hour away from the place he wants to end up in, Ohio State. Ryan Day, he'll probably be there, 4 or 5 years. I could see Ryan Day jumping to the NFL, and then Luke Fickell's coach in waiting.
Yeah, but, I don't. Yeah, go ahead.
If this, we'll completely shut up about everything if we are. But I think it's going to take, Jarman probably opening Leahy's wallet to probably the $4 million.
$4 million, I think.
You and I both know is not going to happen.
I think it could get, I won't say it will breach four, but I wouldn't be surprised if his next guy comes away with, the high threes when it's all said and done. I mean, the reality is, to your point of Cincinnati giving someone 2.4, like, we should not be on the same level of them compensation-wise if we want to be a true Power 5 ACC competitive school.
I agree.
Which is a decision that needs to be made at a higher level.
And maybe this is a good time to ask. So he's a defensive guy, and I know we've talked about this before. I always lean towards offense, especially at a school like BC, if you want to continue that power football, O-line U mentality. He's a defensive, guy. Obviously, he's head coach now, obviously, but I think it would be very interesting to see what the philosophy would end up being on the offensive side of the football. I don't think it's a huge stretch. Not that I watch a ton of Cincinnati, but just based on what I know of them, I do think it would be a similar type of philosophy.
Yep.
But, obviously if he could come in, fix the defense, that would be huge. And, maybe there isn't a big drop off, but
sure.
For all those reasons, I do think he'd be a slam dunk. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. If I can stereotype an entire region of the country, I do just think the Midwest, like, normally is a power football side of things, whether it's the Packers, Wisconsin,
they play,
Ohio State.
Like, really physical in basketball.
Cold weather. These big burly, there's meat on their bones. These, again, think about all the, linemen that Wisconsin pumps out and everyone else in the Big Ten. So I would assume that he also would want to kind of lean that style on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm with you. I'm saying that on no statistical evidence whatsoever.
Agreed. So another one from that same tier, and admittedly, I don't know a ton about this guy because I also don't think he's coming here. But Mike Norvell is another name that is among the hottest in the country. He's the coach over at Memphis. He is 38 years of age, and he's had a lot of success there. He's getting looks from all over the place. He's thought to be one of the front runners of the Florida State job. But he's the type of guy that could come in, and he's an offensive guy. Memphis gets great players considering, the conference they play in. They're also in the AAC. So he's a guy that would be a hot name and one of those can't-miss kind of guys. Similar to like a Scott Satterfield, right? I kind of view Norvell in that same mold where he's had success, sustained success for multiple years. Memphis is 11-1 this year. They were great last year. And, so that's another name that we could see. But again, until we're willing to open up the wallet, that's probably a pipe dream as well.
Yeah, I don't really see that. And I think that, if you're going to get someone without, say, Northeast or Midwest ties, like, I feel like there does need to be some connection to where it makes sense. Again, Fickell obviously has a working relationship with Jarman in the past, which I do think, plays. And then I think he would do well because if we do look at our historical recruiting pipelines, of course, a lot of it's New England and New Jersey, but we've also always been huge in, Pennsylvania and Ohio, which is
actually one X factor with Fickell is he's best buddies with Vrabel, which I didn't realize.
Yep.
But
that's
huge. That could be a big X factor.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Sticking in the Ohio region, I think it seems like there's at least a top, three or four names that are rumored out there. So another one in that group is Jeff Hafley, who is the current OC or DC?
Where's DC.
The current DC at Ohio State.
Co-DC.
Okay. So he is, again, by all accounts, an elite recruiter on that Ohio State defense right now. He has them statistically the best in the country right now versus Shiano last year had him in like the 50s with, more or less the same players. So it seems like he's a very highly touted name. Again, a young guy, which does seem to be the direction that we're going in, which I agree with and is not surprising. Also, Martin's a young guy. He probably wants something a little bit more exciting and energetic into the program. So expect his name to be circulated a lot. I would like it a lot too. I think it would be, it's not a home run. It's certainly not on the Fickell level, but I would be very happy with it. I think it's, a common refrain in college football, but by far the most important aspect of being a head coach is recruiting, no question about it. And by all accounts, he's a phenomenal recruiter. Again, we did have that with Daz a little bit, although you know, Daz was obviously a great recruiter at Florida and Notre Dame and all that. So possibility of a little bit of a retread there theoretically, but overall, I would be happy with that if we could make it happen. Again, he's a hot name as well, so who knows, you know, how long he lasts or if he wants to wait for other stuff.
I'm not in love with this guy, and I know he is the hot name, and I know he's a great recruiter. I don't think we've seen enough from him.
I agree.
At the college level. This is his first year, again, as co-DC of Ohio State, and he's getting a lot of credit for, and I'm sure rightfully so. Ohio State has one of the best probably the best defense in the country. And so, you know, his involvement with that unit is obviously attractive, but we've seen a couple defensive coordinators, particularly from Ohio State. You talk about Chris Ash, who obviously just crashed and burned at Rutgers. So maybe that's in the back of my mind. But between that and, again, what would the offensive philosophy be under this guy? This guy's never run an offense. He would need someone that knows what they're doing at the offensive coordinator position, and that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. I don't know how important it is to, at least your opinion of things, whether or not they have head coaching experience. I don't think it's super important. I do think that there is absolutely a larger risk there. Chris Ash is a great example. DJ Durkin, same thing, you know, when he flamed out at Maryland. I'm not completely out on it, and there's another guy that we'll talk about in a minute who's a big name or a commonly mentioned name right now that doesn't have head coaching experience. But overall, I don't think it's 100% necessary. I do think it's nice, but I don't know. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
I absolutely think it's a plus, but I think that if MJ wants to make a splashy hire that, you know, is high risk, high reward, which I think is probably what we're going to be looking at here, it will have to be someone like Halfley, who doesn't have head coaching experience. Obviously, we're not going to get a sitting coach in Power 5, so it's just the conversation of, all right, do you want someone that plays lesser competition? What I don't want, and I hope you're not even going to mention this guy, is the Holy Cross coach who's gone 500.
Yep.
If you're coaching at FCS, then I don't put any stake into that whatsoever, because it's a complete question as to can you recruit at the Power 5 yep. level, et cetera, et cetera.
I agree. I will say he's a super good looking dude. He's like kind of got the
see it. And I know dudes, man. I don't see it with him.
That's true.
One thing I will say though is you absolutely need to have coordinator experience. And
correct.
I have a feeling you're going to bring up the next guy associated.
Well,
defense.
I should not say you absolutely need to have coordinator experience. I am going to the kind of the holy trinity here in the rounding out of the top three names is of course our guy Al Washington. I'll say he is apparently super popular amongst some of the big donors. I think that the idea of having a BC guy come back, you know, is and we do talk about someone wanting to stay here and wanting to be here. A BC guy is absolutely fits that mold. Excellent recruiter when he was here under Daz. Obviously played here as a linebacker and now has, you know, been with Ohio State for at least this current year. I don't know if he was with Cincinnati for a little bit too.
He's had four teams in 4 years, which I don't know what that's about.
But he's been moving up, right? I mean, it's gotten better every year with the exception of going from here to Cincinnati, which at least was a responsibility increase.
He's the linebackers coach. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to read too much into it. I'm not saying he's, you know, not a great coach. He wouldn't be at Ohio State otherwise. But I would have a huge issue with Al Washington. I think this is an insane risk to take unnecessarily. Why wouldn't you just make him defensive? Wouldn't he accept defensive coordinator at
yeah,
this point?
Yeah, I do agree with you on that side of it. It feels like, yeah, if you could get him in at a lower position and combine him with, you know, whatever, Fickell or name any of these other coaches, I agree with that.
Maybe Adazio. Maybe you invent a time machine, rehire Adazio. To me, that would be, and no one wants to hear this, I know, but that would be my perfect solution is just you blow up the defense. You start from scratch on the defense. You bring in someone like Al Washington that can recruit the lights out, get some players in there. You patch it up however you need to with the transfer portal. You're solid at linebacker with Richardson and McDuffie. You build around that at Lamont too. You build around them. Obviously, you got to grab someone from the D-line, someone in the D-backs, probably multiple people in the D-backs. But to me, that would have been the smart path forward. Obviously, way less risky. But I think that it really could have made a successful season going forward, having Al Washington as D coordinator. But as far as him at head coach, I think that would be a miracle if it worked out.
Yeah, I will say that I would be – so the other rumor now that's popped up is he comes over and Don Brown comes over as defensive coordinator, which, of course, I think we're all aware at this point that – I don't want to call it the hot seat, but there's at least some discomfort with Don Brown and the Michigan fan base.
That should be the other way around.
Especially if you're getting lit up by – Yes and no. I think that having, I think Washington would be a better face for the program. You know, yeah, young, energetic, like just from a recruiting side of it.
You could have him as a coach in waiting, right? Don Brown comes back for 3 years.
I wouldn't have a huge issue with that. I mean, I think that if Don Brown did come over, it would be a little bit like a Pasqualoni with Spaz, Pasqualoni with Daz, where, you know, he's kind of the, call him the associate head coach, but he's again kind of being there as the sounding board and for game management, whether it's, you know, even timeout decisions, things like that, et cetera. But I don't disagree. I don't, and Don Brown, his name's popped up as a head coach as well. That one I don't get excited about at all. He's 64. I don't want to be ageist here, but like 64, like we need someone, you know, young with fresh blood. And, you know, I don't know. That one I don't love. I will say that we would not have to change the name, which is still a TBD thing if we're going to, you and I need to figure out, but that would at least make everything easy on that side of things.
Agreed. So you mentioned Don Brown. A couple of other names that have popped up. Jason Candle, who's over at Toledo. I don't know a ton about him, and Toledo's had a bad couple of years. But yep. He was a hot name from a couple of years ago. And it's funny. We saw what happened with, you know, them hiring Daz 7 years ago. It's not just the guys that are the hot names that BC ends up hiring. Sometimes Correct. You take a 4-7 coach from Temple. Right. So, yep. You know, you could see someone like that. And, you know, we're obviously not in the room interviewing these guys. So, and I'm sure Jarman has a very specific path forward to how he, you know, wants this program to look. Eli Drinkowitz, who we remember as the NC State defensive coordinator, now the Appalachian State head coach, who's gone 11-1 there. That's another name that it sounds like we might be interviewing. Although I think he's Jewish. And I'm not saying we can't have a Jewish coach.
Yikes.
Was that too much to say?
No, I mean, it's not. Go for it. I'd like to hear you out.
Well, Jarman said at the press conference today, we want someone with Catholic values. I think he said that.
If he said that, then that is a disqualifier.
I don't know that this guy's Jewish either. I'm just going based off the name.
I'm with you on the name. Yeah, that's fair.
But that could be a guy. He's a relatively young guy. Offensive guy, which again, you know, I would prefer over defense.
He's got no Northeast ties. And he is, again, right now, he's talked about, again, hot names. He's leading Appalachian State to, again, like you said, 11-1, top 20. Like, you got to think for these Southeastern jobs, because that's, again, he's been NC State, App State, when NC State opens up, you know, like that would be more of a fit. You know, I don't know if he's too low profile for FSU right now, but I feel like college football is still a very regional sport, and it's hard to take someone who, you know, has exclusive Southeast experience, or I mean, I don't know where he was before that, but I know he's never been in the Northeast. It feels like a little bit of a leap. I do think you need some Midwest or Northeast ties.
It's unbelievable that Dave Doran has a job and Steve Adazio doesn't.
Fair enough.
We beat them by a billion.
Yeah, it's not a good look. I think that their fans also would like a change as well.
Last one on my list, and then you can sound off if you have any others. There's a bunch of guys at Clemson that I'd love to get my hands on. Mike Reed's one of them. He's an alum, currently a D-backs coach. Obviously, Clemson solid all the way around, and you know, my theory is that if you take anyone from one of the top programs, they can come in and you know, right the ship wherever.
Yeah, they know
you
how
are.
To write. They know how to run things. They know how.
Yeah,
they know
they've seen
works.
A program and they can implement whatever's working at Clemson, at BC. I think that would be great. They also have I'm blanking on their names, Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott, maybe as co-offensive coordinators. I don't think we would have a shot at either one of them. Seems like they're happy, and we'd have to open up the wallet. And I think they'd have the pick of the litter down south. I will say Jeff Scott's brother. I did some deep research on this one. His brother does live in Boston.
Oh, huge.
So that's a weird connection there. You never know. But Jeff Scott is an offensive genius, and you know, if I think that's obviously would be a great recruiting selling point to have someone from a big program like that. But Mike Reed, I think, would probably make the most sense. He's an alum. They've been a solid defense forever. They've sent a ton of guys to the NFL.
Yeah, but speaking of that defense, by the way, guy. I think we could offer Brett Venables $20 million, and I feel like he still wouldn't take that job. He's going to have that defensive coordinator position at Clemson forever, and he's just going to be happy as a peach.
Agreed. Not happening.
So the other one that's always thrown out every single time there's been a coaching search for the last 100 years at Boston College, Pete Carmichael. Offensive coordinator for the New Orleans Saints. I think, he must have a BC connection, right? Because he is literally mentioned every single year or every single time that there is any. He's from Framingham. Yeah, he went to BC. Okay, so that makes sense. He's literally mentioned every single time that there is an opening. I don't really get it. Obviously, the Saints have been a great offense for forever, and he's been with them since 2009. But also, it seems like the story is that that's mostly a Breeze Payton thing, and I'm not really sure what he does. That one doesn't excite me at all. Again, very little college experience. And then the other names that I want.
And by the way, just on that point, like, you don't come to BC and you don't get Drew Brees and Michael Thomas and guys like that.
Right.
And I said this when I was arguing with people on Twitter, which is all I seem to do these days. But, like, you can't hire someone that is going to stray away from the power football. Like, we're not going to be able to out-recruit anyone in the ACC when it comes to skill players. Right?
I agree with that.
Not going to happen. That's why I was so in on Adazio. He implemented exactly the type of football we needed. He just made a couple bonehead decisions in-game and, you know, wasn't able to adjust, and a couple guys got hurt, and there was a lightning storm, and et cetera, et cetera. So,
sure.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you overall. I think that there is an element there of wanting a guy who has at least some BC connection for that reason. Again, to our point earlier about a guy like Al Washington, he's played here. He understands the culture here. He would not try to install a running gun offensive coordinator. Right? He would try to kind of keep things consistent. So I hear you on that side of things. The one that I've seen posted on a couple lists that I want, could not want less to do with, would be Skip Holtz, currently the head coach at Louisiana Tech. He's a Connecticut guy. Absolutely not. And then outside,
he's got some, he used to be the Gamecocks defensive coordinator.
Yep. He's the OC at South Carolina from 99 to 2003.
So I like him.
Bounced around.
I'm a big
Holtz
guy, not from the Notre Dame days, but from the South Carolina days. You
interesting.
Know that.
Yeah, no, I do. That's absolutely right up your alley.
Actually, speaking of, not to interrupt, have you heard the rumors of Dask potentially becoming the offensive coordinator at USC?
I have not heard that one, and
he's buddies with Muschamp. So
I mean, I think he is legitimately one of, if not the best, offensive line coach in college football or football period. Whether or not you're going to have success bringing that in as an offensive coordinator or a head coach is obviously a different story. But you know, you talk about these big football factories that have these massive budgets for their assistants. Like, toss him $600K to coach up your offensive line, and you'll have the best running game, you know, within a year.
That's what I'm thinking. Except, here's what I think. I think he ends up in the pros. I think he probably lets, because I don't know how the buyout works, but he probably wants to sit around and collect the buyout for a year, and then I could see. I mean, there's a ton of BC connections with horrible offensive lines in the NFL. You think about Tennessee, obviously the Vrabel, Miami with Flores. Atlanta with Lindstrom. All three of those programs, or all three of those teams, have it's probably the top three worst offensive lines in the NFL, and you know, he could easily come in and fix that. Maybe even the Patriots, honestly. I mean, Belichick obviously had great things to say about
once Sarnecchia goes away,
right?
Like, I mean, he's like 80,
he's 1,000 years old. Yeah. So I could see him landing in the NFL and that being a great spot for him, because you're right, I think the public perception is he's not, I don't want to say the game's sort of left him by the wayside, but unless you're like a BC or a Wisconsin or someone that's going to play power football,
right,
he's not going to be an attractive offensive coordinator to bring in.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And then on the Patriots note as well, one that I want to mention that I, again, want nothing to do with is Brett Bielema. He's currently coaching with the Patriots, so he does have some connection to the Northeast right now. He'd at least be, you know, an easy get for an interview, just a short drive up the road. But I personally just don't really like the guy. He always seemed like kind of a dick, both at Arkansas and at Wisconsin, so I'd rather not deal with that.
He had great success at Wisconsin, right?
He did. He absolutely is a winner, but I just, I don't know. Yeah, something feels off about it.
Just, he's tough to look at, I think, is your issue with him.
Yep, that could be it.
And he crashed and burned at Arkansas, I think.
Yes, he did not do great at Arkansas.
So I would agree with that. What about your boy, Steve Belichick?
I would love to give Steve Belichick a phone call. I think he is like 5 years away from a head coach. I do think that, again, he is essentially, and I know the defense didn't look great last night, but he is a, I don't want to say an architect, but he is a key contributor on one of the best defenses in the league this year. So he's and the other reason I would love this is because having the Bill Belichick connection would be awesome. Like, you'd have Bill on the sidelines for, you know, all six home games. He'd be talking about it in the press conference, I think, from a local, you know, Boston's college team. Like, that would absolutely help with that perception. It would get us, you know, more media attention, more casual football fans would be turned on. So that's my biggest thing that I would love to see about that. I think it would just be a big selling point for Boston. He is a super ugly guy. I'll just say that much while we're talking about the Bielema stuff.
Plus, Bill might literally fire him after their performance against Houston last night. So you never know with that. All right. That's everything on my list. Do you have any more?
No, I mean, I think I would, you know, I know there's a negative 0% chance you'd take it, but I think you got to at least give Mike Vrabel a call, don't you? Just be like, hey, you want to come coach your son for 2 years?
Why stop it? Why not just go right to Belichick,
man? Well, Belichick's son doesn't play on the team.
Yeah, but Tennessee is like crushing it. And
I agree, Matt. It would be negative 100%. I'm just saying you have to give him the phone call.
I think it's more likely his kid transfers tomorrow. But anyway, so that's the coaching hot list as far as Fourth and Dude is concerned. Obviously, this is a
what are your rankings, by the way? Can I just get if you had to give me a top three?
Yeah, number one's the Time Machine.
Okay.
I tell you, I think you Daz is head coach, Al Washington's defensive coordinator, and we go from there. No, I mean, I guess it would probably go Fickell, Norvell, and then...
I don't have a... Norvell doesn't really... I know he's a great coach, but it just feels like no connection. Again, talking about a guy with Fickell's downside of, you know, he's probably going to bolt for a job in 2 or 3 years. Like, Norvell, I feel like, could leave tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think you have to... and I said this a billion times, but... this is the issue you're going to run into is if you don't make this the right hire, then we're all going to be, it's going to be like Al Skinner 2.0, where everyone's saying, hey, remember how good we had it?
I mean, it's a little different. I think making the tournament consistently is different than making the quick lane bowl every year, but.
Yeah, I think we're pretty close. And by the way, I mean, that had fallen off it for at least a couple of years, right? When we canned him. But it could be like a Tom O'Brien situation too. And I think, you know,
Tom O'Brien was consistently winning 9 games.
Yeah, and a
shitty
big East
difference.
And a shitty Big East and a shitty ACC.
I mean, that's fine, but you're right. I would say the conferences, I mean, obviously the ACC overall is better because you still have Clemson and, you know, not UConn. But I think
BC, the year that they won the Atlantic in 2007, they went 5-3 that year in conference. Now you have to go 8-0 and beat Clemson. It's just not the same.
Oh, I agree. I mean, that's fine. I don't think the measuring stick should be, you know, are you winning the ACC necessarily? But I think consistently getting, you know, even second place would be, I would take.
I think it's a similar argument. I think TOB pissed off less people along the way, but the whole concept of the ceiling is pretty much identical. So maybe you get a coach Jags that comes in for a couple of years, and you know, he's able to do more with Dallas's players that do stick around, or you get a Spaz, and you know, we'd have the same conversation again in 3 years, Matt.
Fair. I think overall my rankings, obviously I'll put Fickell at number one. I will say my number two would be the Washington Brown combo. They need to both be together, or else I'm not completely sold on that. But
What do you do on offense? Because here's the other thing too.
You give a $700,000 offensive coordinator budget, and you get whoever you want.
Okay, because you know this would never happen, but a lot of people are saying, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could keep Bajakian and Trotwine and Coach White, and we'll just bring in someone on the defensive side, and like
that's... Well, first of all, I don't know how great that would be, but second of all, whatsoever. It is very possible. I mean, it is very... It absolutely
then
can be.
Then why would you
works.
Fire the coach if you're going to keep all of his assistants? Are you nuts?
I agree they wouldn't hire... I'm not saying I want that to happen, but I don't think that's absurd to say, hey, Mike, do you want to stick on for a year?
Yeah, it is absurd, and if that would literally... you're saying just Bajakian?
Well, whoever. Pick whoever you want. I mean, clearly there's issues beyond just Coach Addazio.
This whole staff is gone, with the exception of maybe Gunnell. And that's what happens when you fire a coach. There's a lot of damage that
I can live with that.
Okay. As long as you can live with that. And we'll bring in, you know, better staff across the board. The offense will be better. Defense will be better. And we'll see what happens. So.
I'll just end it with this. I trust Martin Jarmond, and he obviously hasn't proved it with a big time hire.
Yes, his lack of track record.
I have
a
good feeling
about
him. Are
you going based on the women's basketball coach?
I'll go on volleyball. How about that?
Okay, perfect.
So I like that one better. But again, he's a young guy. He's an energetic guy. He knows, you know, I feel like he's a little bit more connected
to knowing what you're doing when it comes to hiring a coach.
I trust him more.
I'm terrified of what's going to happen
than what Brad Bates or Gene DeFilippo would do.
Well, Gene was actually not bad at hiring coaches, I will say that.
I mean, he hired Spaz.
Yeah.
And Donahue.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
All right. So it should be an action-packed next 10 days or so, regardless. Again, a fun time to be a BC fan, or at least most of us. So be sure to follow us on 4th and Dude at Twitter for all the updates. We'll definitely be active. And like we said, definitely keep an eye on the guys over at Eagle Insiders, BC247. There is legitimately no better time to sign up for their VIP level. They've been putting out like 10 premium insider perks a day. I'm refreshing them constantly. So most of the stuff that you hear us say is, I feel like, at least been originated by their insider tips. So can't say enough good things about them. Definitely recommend subscribing, and they'll be on top of this for the next week or so, depending on how long this goes.
And we'll probably do another episode next week. Well, I guess we'll wait for the news.
Wait for the coach, and then obviously we'll do a couple around the bowls.
Yeah, our plan is to, you know, both covering whoever they end up hiring as coach, and then obviously the quick lane bowl, which seems inevitable at this point.
It does. You
got it, Matt. Go ahead.
So the Addazio era is finally behind us. I'll say the sky is the limit for this program, but I'm going to defer to you on not the official name, because Fourth and Dude, a lot of dudes, that's still up in the air. We got to figure that out. But I'll defer to you right now. Are we changing the outro line of "It's always a great day to be a dude"?
Yeah, we got to workshop it. By the way, it's a dude alert, folks. Is the new line?
Okay,
that's what we've been doing, Matt. I don't know if you've been listening all season.
Oh, that's true. I cut it off at the announcements at the end.
Yeah, so I got to sit down and you know, kind of reflect on my future with this Fourth of Dude organization, if I'm going to stick around, we're going to bother doing a podcast to cover a 3-9 team the next 3 years. Yep. Only kidding, hopefully, guys. But yeah, I'd like to keep the dude name, because I do feel like it's a nice way of keeping my guy Daz alive in spirit, at least.
Okay, I hear you. All right, well, thanks again for listening, and hopefully we will have exciting news to report back with another emergency podcast in the next couple of weeks.
It's a dude alert, folks. Dude alert. Brace yourself, baby, 'cause you might get